we've got a banner. We've got a thing. Brand.
He's lost it.
There we
He's
are. No, it. I thought I lost it. There we are. Oh, that was
there
spectacular.
We are.
Elaine, take over.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Elaine Stott from season 39 of Survivor. And with me, as always, Professor Tim Wilson here at Reality NSFW. And we got Alex Lake, a.k.a. Adam, from the U.S. version of The Circle. What's up, Adam? I mean, Alex. Or what should I call you?
Preferably Alex. But, you know, as long as you say it with respect, I don't care what you call
it. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I do have a question, though. Are you and Rebecca still hot and heavy? I think everybody wants to know. If
so, my wife would be very, very upset if I were still
dude, I have to admit, I went back because I knew you was coming on. So I went back and kind of watched, you know, little bits and pieces and stuff. And yo, when you and Rebecca would be talking and like the cringe, you know what I mean? Like, it was like, oh, but it was good TV, though, I have to say. And I was super excited whenever you guys finally met each other. That neither one of you was mad. You guys were totally cool.
Mad? And, you can't be mad. You have to be, like, when you're playing a catfish game, no mm-hmm. matter what you open that door to, you can't be mad. Like, right. I was anxious. I was, yeah, I, but
yeah.
You can't be mad.
Was,
I was
you like,
so,
how am I,
so grateful.
Yeah, was you like, how am I going to explain to this girl that I really didn't meet? Was you thinking that in your head? Like,
well, so even when you're like, I'm 100% certain that Rebecca's a catfish. There's no way it can be. You walk down to that room mm-hmm. and you're like, well, shit. If I am completely wrong about this, I'm going to be such an asshole. And so you, even though you're positive,
right?
It's like, you're right. not positive until you open that door and
right.
Yeah, I mean, like the weight that was lifted off my shoulders when I saw Seaburn, and I'm like, fuck, thank God.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys jumped in each other's arms. It was great. I loved it. Yeah, you kind of came in. What did you came in a little late, right?
Mm-hmm.
A few episodes. So I always feel like the people that come in late are at a disadvantage. Did you feel that way when you played? Or do you think you made up ground even though you was behind?
I made up as much ground as I could with as like sort of unprepared as I was. Right. I did not do the worst I could have done. I could have been a lot. Yeah, I mean, I could have gotten kicked off in the first elimination that I was, and I thought I would be.
Right.
So I mean, I was happy about that.
Right. Well, we always get off topic here. We was actually here to talk about season three.
Not yet. I hope we have an opportunity to grill Alex a little bit more, because you've only just touched on that thing, but I got the distinct impression watching you, Alex, that you had a suspicion, a strong suspicion, that Rebecca was a catfish from the very beginning.
Yeah. I mean, she was just too pure, too, like, innocent, naive, like, no man has ever even glanced at me before. And it's like, no, the woman in these photos is a total bombshell and bullshit. But it's not my thing to say, like, everything you were saying to me now is bullshit and wrong.
Right.
It's to say, okay, yes, I'm in love with you. And I should have, I mean, one of my big regrets is like trying to be Adam the Playboy instead of Adam, like, I love you, Rebecca. You are mine forever. Because I think that shot me in the foot in some ways.
Well, do you think if you just didn't do the flirt game at all, you would have been done better?
I think I need, well, yes, I would have done better. Really, it's not about the flirt game. It's about, like, knowing when to stop.
Right.
I think I needed it in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But then once I was with Rebecca, I should not have, like, even looked at anybody else. I should have just been.
Yeah, you certainly shouldn't have done it.
I'm in love with you.
That's kind of what's going on right now.
We're getting married tomorrow.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Elaine, because I think it's not an individual who wins this game. I think it's I think it's whoever appeals most to production who wins this game. I'm quite cynical about this. Mm-hmm. And I think production is looking for two things. It's looking for who is compelling television, mm-hmm. and it's looking for a confrontation in the final program.
Oh, okay.
So from that point of view, Alex, you potentially provided that confrontation. Therefore, you were a very strong player.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, the production loves a catfish because catfishes, they're always on their toes.
And you can have that reveal.
Yeah.
Yep. So one of the two people in that final confrontation has to be a catfish.
Hmm. Almost definitely.
Yeah.
Almost,
because you can't play it any other way, can you? Really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at the end, it could be five legitimate people, but then like
that'd be boring.
No, it's not that it would be boring. It would just be that like somebody has to have like such strong suspicions that one of those people is a catfish.
Yes, and like, then be that, proven
there's,
wrong.
There's that dynamic and that tension.
Oh,
that,
okay.
Yeah.
That pretty much needs to exist, or there has to be like beef that's so strong that like. You think somebody's going to throw a punch and it's, yeah. I mean, I don't think production will let anybody.
I think if all the people around that final table are real, are genuine, then
it won't happen, but yes.
It could happen. I see no reason why it couldn't happen in some future series if the show survives. And down its present tangent, I think it's, or down its present trajectory, I don't want to have any more reference to triangles, but down its present trajectory, I really don't think it stands very much chance of surviving much beyond this year. But if it would survive, I'd love to see it survive. I'd love to see a sort of slightly purer version of the circle survive. Then if we were to imagine at that final table, we had five real people, I'm afraid production would have to work even harder than they already work to make that an effective meeting. The individuals are, you know, they give their all for this show,
mm-hmm.
But they need that additional input of really being very cleverly set up to make it work.
Yeah.
I did a little program the other day. Somebody reached out and asked me if I would read out the winners on a circle Instagram game, and I thought, I have no idea what this is. You know, I'm a little bit terrified of the internet anyway. But you know, give me a little power, give me a button to press, and I'm anywhere. You know, I can get lost on my staircase going up to bed, let alone with the sort of the complexities of the internet. And I thought, oh God, how is this going to work? It was very nice. It was very sweet. But I did feel that once I'd announced who had won,
mm-hmm.
you know, 5-4-3-2-1, it was a bit of a sort of damp squib. And I thought, you know, there wasn't that much more to do.
Yeah.
And I did quiz them a little bit more than perhaps they were expecting. You know, but put me in a room with a few contestants or participants. And I just think, ooh, yum, 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 yum. Here's an opportunity. I mean, in the past, I was shameless. If I was ever taken to a restaurant, you couldn't get me away from the waiter or the waitress. I'd want to know all their back history. And now it's so lovely, having come out of the circle, they come up to me, or at least they did before COVID, they come up to me and they tell me their back history. I don't even have to ask. It's like heaven. I can go down the street and people will stop me in the street and tell me about themselves. I think, yes, I don't even have to ask you. So, Adam, what have you been doing? What have you been doing in the last year? Tell me. Because I keep seeing you pop up on my Instagram, and I feel I know you, but then I also feel I don't really know you. So could you explain who you are and what you do?
Who am I?
Deep dive. Here we go.
My wife is whispering something at me. Oh, she wants me to say my name is Alex. They know that.
We know you're Alex. Alex. Yeah. It's a good Greek name. Alexandros Omegas. Alexander the Great.
Meerkat?
Megas, great. Not Meerkat. Okay. Yeah.
So
Alexander the meerkat. There we are.
What have I been doing this past year? I've been staying at home with my wife and my cats. I've been helping my wife with her business. She makes sweaters. She's a knitwear designer. So I help her with her business. It's called Soft House. I've been...
There's the cat.
I'm surprised my cat hasn't jumped up on the table yet. I've been like just sort of trying to figure out what the hell I am doing.
Right.
I've been going to analysis, which is great in ways and completely weird in other ways. I've just been trying to do my best while staying at home.
Now, tell me, where did you get the wonderful pajamas from?
The trousers?
Yes.
My wife made those.
I thought she might have done. Can you tell her they're absolutely angelic? I thought here is someone to rival my sense of design.
I listened to you on another podcast during my season, and I was really broken how disappointed you were that I didn't keep up.
You didn't.
I have to say, one of the things that really peeved me is, so before you go on the show, they give you this list and they're like, don't bring clothes that have stripes. Don't bring clothes like this. Don't bring clothes like that. And you don't do that. But then I bring all this stuff and I put on this shirt and it's bright orange. And the voices from the heavens come down and they say, look, that shirt is just too bright for the camera.
It's no brighter than the apartment.
But it's like the camera, it's like too vibrant. And I'm like, all of this stuff is too vibrant. It's too patterned.
He's going to be naked at him.
A lot of the time it was like, I couldn't wear either that or my wife makes all these sweaters. And it's like, it was 110 degrees.
No, so I'm impossible not going to do the sweaters.
Even though I wanted to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had a lot of sweaters as well.
Yeah. I feel like, I was disappointed that I wasn't able to bust just out
showcase.
My full wardrobe. Yeah.
Well, at least you wasn't on Survivor where you got one outfit you wear for the entire time. And,
I'm okay with that.
One outfit designed by Alex's wife. Would be a joy, wouldn't it? We would never tire of seeing it.
I mean, if I were on Survivor, I would probably insist on a Johnny Weissmuller loincloth for the whole season. Probably not practical.
Knitted, I trust.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I got lucky. I got to bring a flannel, and let me tell you, at night that thing came in handy. And my wife doesn't want to hear it, but everybody wanted to sleep with me. So it's like, yeah, because I'm telling you, man, at night that wind was blowing, it would get super cold, and so the flannel, I would wrap up in it. It was great.
Yeah, I can't do wilderness.
It's not that bad. Yeah, have you ever been camping?
It's not my favorite thing. I only like a camping trip when the car is maybe
glamping. You're calling
No, I mean, it wasn't called glamping when I was doing it. It was you park the car, you walk half a mile, and you pitch a tent, and then you walk a half mile back to the car.
Yeah. See, when we go out in the country.
A lot of me thinks camping is such a ridiculous thing. You might as well do it in your garden, really. But I did look after goats on a mountainside for about 6 months, and I suppose that was sort of camping because I had to sleep with my goats, and not in any sort of intimate way. Well, it was fairly intimate. I mean, they were all over me, but goats got very, very sharp teeth. And they're very good at biting the ear. Even though I did a certain amount of dentistry to the goats when they were born, they were little boy goats. I did dentistry on both ends, of course. I felt like Sweeney Todd on a good day. Mrs. Lovett, where are you?
You never cease to amaze me with all the stuff that you've done. It's crazy. Like, you're like, oh, yeah, I've done this. Yeah. I was a monk and... It's like, I haven't done anything. It's like, you're so interesting. And I'm like, compared to Tim, it's crazy.
I all of these things were accidental. I do have a life plan and it doesn't involve goats or monking. But for some reason, life takes these strange little journeys down alleyways you'd never imagined you would be penetrating.
And you landed on the circle. And became super popular.
The circle wasn't even an alley that I looked down. I was telephoned out of the blue on a cold, wet day in Cambridge. And frankly, when I came out of the circle, it was extraordinary because I was walking down. I was walking in the area near a railway station called King's Cross, which has quite a reputation, or at least used to have quite a reputation. I mean, it was the sort of place that judges used to go to cruise for interest, and. When their briefs weren't when their briefs were too tight. I was in that area. It's got a rather nice new sort of circular area where people can walk while they're waiting for their trains. Nowhere to sit down, and it looks quite pretty. Anyway, this very leggy Ukrainian lady came up to me and started speaking to me. I think she was speaking in Russian. I certainly understood her. And in those days, I could sort of understand Russian. And she asked me for my telephone number, and I'd only just come out of the circus. Of course, I gave it to her, and I was terribly garrulous at that point. And she said to me, you know, she very flattering. She says, "You look as if you've been on the telly." I said, "Well, I have." and at that point, you said whatever she would have asked me, I would have said yes. And I was with a friend. I can't remember whether this was someone from the circle or whatever. And they said, "Did you just give that woman your telephone number?" So, in fact, I think I must have done the whole conversation in another language because it wasn't that clear. And I said, "Yes." They said, "Are you mad?" And I thought, "No, I've just been programmed to answer whatever I'm asked to say yes to whatever I'm asked." And that was one of the effects that tends to happen. You get so used to saying yes to, or, you know, you are now going to paint a picture of this particular person or that particular person. You're now going to get changed. You're now going to eat. You're now going to go to bed. And equally, I got very used to sort of elaborating on my interior thoughts. You know, this lady from the Ukraine. I mean, she was lucky. She didn't start being told what I'd just eaten for lunch. She
did
got
she
off
call
lightly,
you?
I thought.
What? Did she
no,
call you though?
No, I was really sorry about that. So, you know, maybe she's watching this and thinking, where is he?
so they give you guys a schedule, like you guys have to go to bed at a certain time and stuff like that, or?
Yes, but I mean, that bedtime is sort of 3-4 o'clock in the morning, but
time is very loose. They take, I mean, at least for me, they took away my watch, so I had no idea what time it was. And they'll be like, "Do you want to go to the kitchen and make some lunch?" And I said, "Yeah, what time is it?" And they'll just say, "Oh, it's lunchtime."
Yes, that's okay. It. For me, they started to get very anxious when I hadn't gone to make lunch or something. So, "Don't you think you should be making lunch?" "No." It's like my mother, you know, in British English particularly, we hate giving commands. So we tend to ask a question, which means a command, you know. "Would you like to help with the washing up?" "No." Yeah. That's not the correct answer, of course. No. This is a disguised command. "Don't you think it's time for lunch, Tim?" It's a disguised command. "Eat." As if one's some sort of pig. Yeah. You know, and I didn't want to eat. And they said, "Don't you think you should have some variety in what you eat?" "No." And the next day, my fridge was filled with stuff that frankly went off because I wasn't going to touch it.
Really?
You know, I thought, I've given you my menu, and it is never going to change.
Wow.
Are you surprised? No, I really don't.
It's interesting because, like, like you were saying, you like what you like. So why do they want you to eat other stuff?
Well, it's not so much I like what I like, but I think what I eat tends to do me good. And it's when I have flexibility that everything goes wrong. I mean, lockdown has been a disaster. My partner loves flexibility. I test it. I like to go to bed at the same time every night, which now tends to be at 3 o'clock in the morning. I've been very well trained by the circle.
I'm always like, "Tim, are you still up? Like, what are you doing? Because I know it's late over there." And he's like, "Oh,
yeah, I am. Yeah.
Just texting away."
Yeah. I never sleep. I'm like a sort of brooding character. But I find the problem is the telly. I find my partner's watching something. He says, "Come and watch this." And I go in and I watch it. And that sort of effect of not doing something for the moment has a sort of soporific sort of impulse, and I just curl up and go to sleep. So I've then had 2 or 3 hours sleep, and then I'm filled with a second wind, and I want to get back to my drawing board and animate. And I'm, animation is boredom sort of deified, and you're drawing the same thing again and again. At the moment, I'm doing something rather wonderful, which I can't talk about, so I will. And I thought, is it possible to take the original Phiz illustrations of Charles Dickens and bring them to life with all the cross hatching, without it becoming sort of like some sort of gauzy effect, moire effect? And I think you've just got to be very careful. And
I can't draw sticks. I can't draw sticks, I swear.
You just haven't tried, I suspect. That's all. Everybody can draw in a way.
It's just a variant. I mean, I went to a bona fide art school for 4 years.
Did you really?
Yeah, I went to the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, which is, I mean, if you know it, it's the school of the museum.
Yes.
And it's a very good school.
Isn't this the place where Rothko went to?
Did Rothko go to the Art Institute, Gina? I don't know, but I can try. I don't know.
Google.
Yeah. Google, and then Alex will look incredibly clever.
Or you say, hey Alexa.
Yeah.
If you got that, I don't have that.
I couldn't do that. I'd be so confused.
Gina's saying it's hard because he has a bunch of paintings in the collection, which is, it's Rothko.
He does have a bunch of paintings in Chicago. Chicago is one of the places which has got a big Rothko collection.
They have a lot of the greatest hits of art there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I'm looking forward to coming over, and seeing the Great Lakes and all that sort of stuff. It's a
great city.
Yeah. He's going to come to Kentucky, and I'm going to throw him on a four-wheeler.
Where in Kentucky are you?
I'm in Corbin, Kentucky. It's just north of the Tennessee line.
Okay.
You're not so far away, are you, from each other?
I'm in Los Angeles now. I went to college in Chicago. He went to Yale. I grew up in North Carolina. I was born in Maryland. I lived in New York for a bunch of years. So I've bounced around.
Right.
So what did you do in LA?
What do I do in LA? So that's where I am now.
What brought you to LA? Is it Gina?
So my wife has family out here. So
right. Up. I thought LA was down.
Well,
no,
it's out west and down.
All right, so yeah, it's, okay.
It is the southwest.
It's that way.
It's that way. Okay. That way.
Yeah, it's called Yonder. You ever heard of Yonder?
Yeah.
It's Yonder. He's
go local. West. Go west. Yeah. Go west.
So I
had to copy those paintings for a TV documentary about 2 years ago, and it was wonderful because there's two really famous paintings, and one's got an angel in it. So I took the angel from one painting and made the angel move into the other painting with electricity cable.
I was rather entertained
by this one. Your culture. Your culture is just so visually vibrant. It's because you're creating images, you're creating mythology all the time, and it's hardly surprising Disney comes from America.
For so many reasons, but yes.
Yeah. I mean,
imagery, and then also the intense capitalism
but you've got the
labor of animation is
yeah. Oh yeah, the labor of animation.
I mean, that's very American.
It's very American and Russian. And these two countries really defined it. Russia was sticking it on a train and sending it around Russia to do propaganda, and Disney was embracing it and saying, children, that's what it's for. Russia was saying, to instill the spirit of the revolution all the way across the steps. Yeah.
Russia was hypothetically for the people, and I don't know. Disney is very much about capitalism and making...
Well, I think once the Second World War began, and Disney realized that he didn't have to pander to an audience of children and could actually do propaganda, he did it better than the Russians had even thought of doing it. Have you seen the Russian the Disney propaganda films? They're stunning.
Well, no. I mean, the thing is I mean, I should know more about Russian propaganda, Russian animation. I have a very good friend who's teaching a class right now on politics and animation at CalArts.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you must get your friend to get in touch with me, because I used to do I did a class in Moscow, which was ostensibly about animation, but in fact the first 4 or 5 weeks were entirely about Russian propaganda, because I suddenly had access to all this stuff, and I had an audience that could understand it, and I thought, wow, you know, this would be criminal to ignore, and I simply went for it, and it is so inventive.
There's so much of it.
There's so much of it, and we have so little access.
I'm going to have to do some homework to find out.
Well, you're going to be disappointed, because it's almost impossible to access. But there is some on YouTube, and one or two people have made a few documentaries. I would love somebody to give me a pile of money, but whether or not I'll ever get my foot back into the door of Mother Russia, God knows. But that's where it all is.
Right. I mean, it's expansive, and what makes it out to the West is very limited. It's like you have Eisenstein and Dvzhenko and they're like Russian filmmakers, but
yep.
Also,
like, who pretty well, I mean, you know, whatever film you're making, you're now very much dependent on the Russian techniques. Not only have you got the technique of editing, which turns up in Russia, Eisenstein defines that, but yeah, But you've also got the Stanislavski method, which gives you the way to perform on camera.
Yeah, I guess it never really occurred to me that is a Russian method.
Well, I lived just down the road from the Moscow Arts Theatre. I actually lived in a building which was built on the site of Sergei Esenin's house. And as I came out of my front door, there was a big plaque which said, this is Sergei Esenin's home dom. And I felt so proud, because one of the first plays that I did a front cover for, because plays are often published in the UK when they're on in the West End, and there was a play called When She Danced, and it was written by Martin Sherman, the man who wrote Bent. It's written in 8 languages. It's simply wonderful. It's so funny. And it's about Isadora Duncan and her very, very brief relationship with Sergei Esenin. She went to Russia and she met a Russian Soviet soldier who happened to be a poet. She couldn't speak Russian. He couldn't speak English. They communicated through a translation, through a translator, an interpreter called Beltzer. And they were married and they were living in Paris, and they didn't speak French either. And so all the various characters in this play speak the language which is appropriate, and one or two characters manage to speak one or two other languages, right, and therefore give us an in to this very strange drama. Yeah, and, I mean, and as a result, it's hilarious. I mean, there's a wonderful Greek man who speaks a very small amount of Greek, the one language I would have understood comfortably, and most of the time he's speaking English to Isadora, and he's a gay piano player. And he provides probably the best scene. She wants to rehearse her new dance. And so he's busy playing away like mad. And she's sitting in the corner of the room. And he suddenly stops and looks at her. And she says, oh, you want to see my feet move? Well, for that, you'll have to come to the concert. And she explains she just does it all in her head. Anyway, I was captivated. And Sergei Esenin, very difficult to cast, because you need somebody who can deal with the pages of Russian, has long speeches in Russian, and we in the audience sit watching this thing, and we think, oh yes, I understand everything, because it's so well written.
Really?
And you do, you understand what he's saying while he's ranting in Russian, drinking vodka. I mean, you know, it was like an ordinary day in my life. Now that I think back to that, it's so accurate. But they didn't stand a chance, unfortunately. Sergei fled back to Russia, and Isadora then got strangled with a scarf, and Sergei killed himself.
What?
But Esenin's poetry is the first poetry a child would learn in Russia. Little do they know that he was gay, given the...
Well, I mean, Russia wants to brush all of that under the carpet, I mean.
Well, all of that back into a closet. I mean,
yeah, you know. That's what I was going to say.
It's like I feel like the Russians won't admit.
Well, when I was last there, there was a ballet which had been developed about Tchaikovsky's life, and then suddenly it wasn't performed, and and I think the director ended up, I can't remember whether he ended up being put in prison or what happened, but all rather sad. Because it's a vibrant, wonderful, I can't think of any other country in the world where you get on the metro and everybody's got a book and they're reading. And, you know, you just don't, yeah. You go to the London metro, you look around and you long to see a book. Instead, you see these awful newspapers. I shouldn't say awful newspapers now because they've printed some rather nice stories about me. But and they're free.
Newspapers are something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're not as wonderful as
a lot worse.
They're not as wonderful as looking around and, you know, everybody's reading Dostoevsky or whatever, and you think, yeah, you know, I can barely pronounce his name.
Well, there's nothing more that I like than to like be on a train sitting next to somebody and like just sort of glancing at what they're reading, like read a page or two of whatever they're reading. But yeah.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. Isn't it wonderful? I mean, I remember years ago, I mean, today's the first Passover. So I remember years ago, I taught in an area of London where there's a very large Hasidic community. And I was invited to go to the local yeshiva and to learn how to read. So pages of the Talmud, and it's wonderful because children were taught how to read upside down, so you can get than one person sharing the book. And I thought, if I only knew how to do that, then I could read everybody else's book on the train. I could see, you know, I could immediately see what they're doing. But I'm a bird with very little brain, really, and I need the things to be. My foreign languages are very slow as well. Hmm?
Oriented in the proper way.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it would be wonderful to learn how to read upside down or
I barely read straight. I barely read straight forward. I can't flip a book. There's just no way that's happening. It's just gonna work out.
These days I've fallen in love with audiobooks. Anyway, maybe we should advance into our program. So I think we've got two episodes to sort of talk about, but we've got a few characters to talk about now, and I much prefer to talk about the characters than the episodes. The two characters I would like to concentrate on are James playing Gemma and Tally playing Tally, or the original Tally. I think these two characters are important, partly because of their exit, and James hasn't yet exited, but I'm sure it's imminent. Mm. And Tally, I think, has exited, hasn't she?
Yeah.
And I think in the last episode we had something which was trialed in the celebrity version, and it made me fume in the celebrity version when I saw it. And you know, if I was prone to throw books at the television, you know, my library would have been severely damaged. But I'm not prone. And it's this extraordinary thing. Emma Willis pops up on the screen and says, you now have to reach a unanimous conclusion and you have to vote. And then you don't get a unanimous conclusion. You have to do it again.
Yeah.
Try again. And
that was a bit maddening. Because they went through what, 2-3 rounds of this?
Yeah, and they did it in the celebrity version and they did it here. Mm. And here they were obviously not going to give way. In the celebrity version they gave way and they said, let's just go with the most votes. Here they were determined to get a result. And you know, people like Vethan were determined not to back down. And you can hear the voice of God saying, Vethan, change your mind. And Vethan, you know, he's a strong-willed character. Mm-hmm. And so he stuck to his guns for as long as he possibly could. But I was thinking, you know, really, this is why the Vatican doesn't have an inside camera in the Sistine Chapel when it's electing a pope, because this is like watching wallpaper dry.
Yeah,
it's some. It's boring beyond. I mean, do you both agree, or am I being?
I don't like it. I think they should just do majority because that's
it's,
how.
I don't think it's boring. I think it's frustrating. It's a little funny. I'm like. I bet they end this episode on a cliffhanger, and they're like on their fifth round of like stalemate.
Yeah.
It's like really they should have gotten it down. What was it at the end of the first voting, and I think even the second voting, it was both Andy or Saeed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They should have just had a runoff between Andy and Saeed. Those are the only two
options. Well, you're quite right,
and
that Alex.
Would have just put it at two rounds of voting, over, done.
I mean, if you wanted to do a sort of Monty Python type thing, you should have dedicated the entire episode to vote after vote after vote, and Emma saying, try, Emma saying, try again. You know, you know the way she sort of curls into a chair and then it looks very seductive. And he's a utter professionalism. She's thinking, what the hell do I do now? Try again. you've not got it. Try again. And I think that would make a great episode, but it's not how it was presented. Mm. This was presented as something which was going to be very brief, and then it isn't. And I think you have to establish as a producer that this is going to be this is all you're going to get, folks.
Yeah,
all you're going to get is people voting in various ways and finding strange ways to apply pressure. I mean, if you had a buzzer and you could and you could press a button and a buzzer and give all these people electric shocks, I'm sure that would be we could introduce a little bit more of the scientific diversity of these horrible programs in prisons and universities.
When we discussed this last time, when it was on Celebrity Big Brother, I told you the best way to solve that problem is they do like they do on Survivor. If you get a tie or where people can't make a decision, the people that are up become safe.
Yeah.
And then, I think they should
You see, Elaine, I just find it extraordinary that given the fact that we've got a program with 20 years experience, which has negotiated exactly this issue, mm-hmm. then we get something like The Circle that comes along and reinvents the circle. reinvents the wheel, sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, how maddening is that? They should be taking, if they're approaching the same problem, they should be taking a more entertaining mm-hmm. solution and presenting what you suggested, Alex. I think that would make a great program.
Well, I mean, it definitely cuts it off, and you don't have to go round and around and around because, yeah.
How many rounds did they end up going?
They settled on 80 in the third round.
Right. Okay. It felt like the fifth round,
but no, I mean they really dragged it out.
It was boring.
Like stand and sit and vote. The one thing that I did find interesting about it was Gemma's strategy of changing who she was voting for every time. Saeed this time because
every
I want
time.
Saeed to like me. Well, I already put Saeed. So I'm gonna put Andy so Andy still likes me. Oh well, I've done that. Why don't I just vote for Felix now? And I really liked that. I think that's brilliant.
I have no. I have no loyalty. Love me. Absolutely.
That.
And where else?
I
do you
think
go?
She's grasping at straws, though.
she is.
I think.
Lasted this long.
Yeah.
I think Gemma is heading for a major breakdown, and I think we're going to see it in this program, in this next episode. I think this is part of the reason I find this season of The Circle so frustrating, that it's become intrinsically cruel, and it's not just that you hear about this nastiness after the show, it's you actually get to see it.
Yeah.
It seems to me to be shameless.
I mean, it's much more explicit. It's like. Yeah, I mean, Tally, who I absolutely adore.
Yeah.
I adored her from episode one.
Me too. Me too.
Now. It's like, she got a raw deal in the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like incredible.
But she's not the only one who's had a raw deal.
Oh, no, not at all. But,
you know, Billy.
Yeah.
There's a few people that's got the shaft.
Well, you know, Billy, Gemma, Tally, they've not stood a chance. Their game has been defined by them, by production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, by the structure.
Gemma cannot last more than one more vote. She's immune to this vote.
You can't. Don't know for certain. I would be shocked if Gemma was at that final table, but anything could be anything. I think Felix could go before Gemma does, unless Manrika is really going to stick it out.
Can we talk about Manrika for a minute? Can we talk about
it? Yes, like, let's try Manrika.
I love that girl.
You see how well informed we all are.
She's a spitfire, like she's a firecracker, son, but it just didn't set right with me. You know, turning on her friend like that for this it's a showmance. It just didn't set right with me for some reason.
She's not the only one who turns in this in this episode. Vethan also appears to turn as well. I mean, he appears a little bit more vicious than he really is.
For the entire first week and a half of the game, it's just been nothing but Manrika and Tally, like, and Manrika saying, you know, I got her back. She's my girl. You know, she's talking to the television whenever, you know, people are doing this, that, and the other. Like, she's just constantly standing up for her. And then one small tiff of disagreement between friends, and it's like she totally flipped script, and I don't know. I just didn't. It didn't set right with me. I kind of understand because she didn't want Felix to go. I understand that, but she should have never have dropped her all the way down. She should have left her.
Yeah, it should have been in the middle.
It's. I don't know.
It's very extreme, and that could come around and shoot Manrika in the
foot. Yeah,
because
absolutely.
Tally was one of her biggest advocates. I think Tally rated her at number two after Andy in that round of elimination.
She's always, ever since they first hooked up, always at the top. So, and it's like,
I mean, that's the person you want to have on side. Even after that, like, little tiff, it's like, Tally was still, Manrika is my person.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And so, really, it could come around and...
I was going to say, Tally is a very interesting character because when we met her, we didn't see very much character at all. And she wasn't given very much opportunity to develop her personality on screen for some reason.
Until the orange egg, blue egg, red
and,
egg.
And so we then have the orange, blue Tally, which sort of defines her. And then you feel there's great sympathy for her. I felt a great alliance with her the moment I saw her, I must confess. And then I was awaiting the evidence to justify my affection for her.
That's how Tim rolls. He gets it first and then gets the evidence later.
I didn't find that evidence was very forthcoming. Mm-hmm. And I think this might have been the edit.
Right.
And they were sort of saving it up for all the nastiness. The two people that I really liked, I really warmed to when I first met them, was Tally and Billy, and both of them, I felt, had room to grow. Now, Billy started to grow, and then he was out. I love the Asian, or you would say Southern Asian, grouping. I love Manrika, Uncle Syed, who I think is giving the best catfish demonstration ever on television. I mean, if he hasn't already got...
I'm shocked that he's been able to hold it up.
And he's doing so good.
He does so well. If he hasn't already been given a permanent scholarship to the to a drama school for that performance, then drama schools don't deserve to exist. Because this is in terms of. In terms of audition, this is just stunning.
No, he does really well. He does.
He's incredible. Out of all of them, Hashu, when he came on, it's like his energy is like not aligned with mine. It's like too big and like sort of a boisterous way. And I saw him on the first episode and I'm like, I don't like him. Fuck him. I want him to be gone. And now I'm like, holy shit. He's so lovable. He's really funny. He's really smart and incredible. And it's like,
and he's got his head screwed on. He's got his heart screwed on in the right place. Don't you feel?
Absolutely.
He is totally true.
And say what you will about anything in production about this show, but they're able to make everybody at worst just sort of conflicting, like sort of like, do I like them or not like them? And that's the worst they do. There's never anybody on any of these series that's like, fuck that person, I hate them for their entire run. Because there are reality shows where it's like, there is the
villain. The villain, yeah.
The villain, and that's like the trope. And
right.
Yeah.
It's like, I love how conflicted I feel about like how
except,
I feel about these people from episode to episode.
And except, are you dynamic. Are you aware that Manrika has received hate mail?
Yeah, I've seen that.
No, they've been
blasting.
You see, in my year, Paddy and James received hate mail, death threats when they got out, which is just unforgivable,
crazy.
I think. And now Manrika's getting this, and you just think...
That's absolutely wrong.
Yeah, it's bullying.
Ultimately,
bullying is not cool.
I mean, if people with screws loose and don't see the divide between television and real life, and it's like, look, Manrika is just trying to play the best that she can play.
Yeah.
For the small cash prize that's at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah. See,
you can't hate her for that.
No, I didn't agree with it. You know, getting rid of Tally, because I'm like, yo, that was your ride or die. You can't cut your ride or die. But I'm a super loyal person. But I would never be like, Manrika in real life, I hate your. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
I would never. It's like, yo, I lost you on my TV. You know what I mean?
But also, it's like, it's one part of Manrika, and we're what, 10 episodes in, and she's been absolutely delightful.
Yeah.
Yes.
98%. And even the 2%, it's like, not that she's not delightful. She presents herself as conflicted. Mm. When she's putting in Tally in the bottom, she's like, well, maybe I shouldn't do this. And then when Tally is at the bottom and is one of the two that's up for elimination, she feels awful.
Yeah.
You see,
she sees how she fucked up. If she was like, good, let's get Tally out of her, then that would be unforgivable. And not unforgivable, but it would be a different story.
There's some crazy people in this world.
So it's
though,
like, people need to like take a step back, breathe. You're allowed to yell at your TV, whatever you want to yell at your TV.
Mm-hmm.
But you should definitely.
We should never cross the line like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
and send someone you know death threats for something they've done on a reality TV show is just the craziest thing I've ever
heard. Well, on any show, I mean, you know, I go out.
Well, yeah,
and,
any show.
You know, years ago, when I was doing a certain amount of acting, because I have eyebrows, I found I was always cast according to my eyebrows, and you know, Priti Patel has to pay for them. I have them naturally, and I found I was always cast as a villain, and I remember playing. Yeah, because I can do all this eyebrow acting.
Yeah, yeah.
I can put Roger Moore to shame. but yeah, I played Creon once. I remember in a Greek tragedy. I don't know; it might have even been in Greek, but it was a and I got booed. And I thought, this is wonderful, like a pantomime villain in a serious play getting booed. So I was lurching from villain to villain, and I thought, I don't really want to play villains anymore. Now I think if I were to go back into acting, I could sort of play all the Santa type figures, you know, the benign old men who, you know, the worst I would get is something like Tevye. I just want a bit of money. Would it not? For instance, we wear these little prayer shawls, it would be great fun. Or Zorba. But playing villains, I would have been horrified if I'd got hate mail. Mm. You know, people need to be able to see this is a part you're playing. And I think maybe the storytelling of production was not as clear as it could have been, because we wanted to see why Manrika was irritated with Tally. And we got a hint of it. I don't think we really saw it as clearly as we could have seen it. And that would have given us more of a reason, because there's two games in this show. There's the game you see on the TV, and there's the game that the contestants see while they're playing,
right?
As you know, Alex.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a slight difference between the two. Well, in my case, the game I think I was playing was exactly what you were seeing, I was very much aware of what was going on, but I think most people were not.
You sort of have to be.
You have a sixth sense, and once you've been in there for quite a while, you weren't in there really quite long enough. It took about a week, just over a week, for it to kick in, and then you sort of had this sense of things going on around you. And I remember Woody and
around you and above.
Yeah, Woody and Ella were obsessed with trying to locate where the flats were. I wasn't interested in where the flats were. The flats for me were sort of nebulous. Had some nebulous geography, but I was very much aware that there were these other people around me, and it's sort of orbiting. And I sort of knew them, and I wasn't really interested in catfishing. I was interested in establishing a relationship with these people, whatever stories they were prepared to tell. And if their stories weren't sound, then I probably would have outed them.
Do you think you would have got massive hate if you would have went against something you had been doing the entire season and say, like, went for one of your friends? Because I did.
When you got rid of Ella.
I got rid of Ella, which I didn't want to do. I got rid of Brooke, which I didn't want to do.
But did you receive massive hate afterwards you didn't?
Surprisingly, I didn't, no. I certainly expected it.
Right.
But at the time, I didn't see any alternative. I put forward my reasons in both cases, and also sigh. You know, every single time I blocked somebody, I didn't really want to do it. But I didn't see a big alternative.
Well, I was just trying to figure out, like, you know, Manrika, as far as I was concerned, she's one of the more popular of the players. So maybe it is because she didn't get to give the reasoning such as you did. And you was super popular, so maybe that's why they were a little confused by it. You know what I mean? And
I mean, I think just putting Tally all the way at the bottom was it was too much of an adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
It just shouldn't have been.
Yeah, no, that was the big mistake, because it's like I understood it, because she was like, okay, if Tally gets influencer, Felix is going to go home, so I don't want her to put her at the top, but she could have put her in the middle. You know what I mean? She could have put her a little higher up, just not all the way up. And so I didn't understand that part of it. But at the same time, it's like maybe if production had went through and kind of explained it, like Tim was saying, maybe you got a little more of the conversation or something.
Yeah, you see, as a performer, if you don't pick up the fact that you have sort of four or five different ways of communicating with the audience, mm-hmm. if you don't pick this up on day one, you're lost.
Right.
And we're so obsessed in the West with communication verbally that we forget that there's many other ways in which we can communicate to the audience. One of them is simply by the statement of what we wear, what we do. I mean, I thought in the this is why I loved your trousers so much, because they sent out messages, and why I was sorry to see them disappear, because they could have continued to sort of color code your performance, and they gave, or at
very least my subconscious.
Mm. Yeah. And they gave us something, you know, they were very distracting. This is like looking at sort of 1930s film with, Catherine Hepburn. I mean, I did imagine you as a sort of, hirsute Catherine Hepburn.
I love Catherine Hepburn.
Isn't she wonderful? Isn't she wonderful?
I don't think I'm quite as stern, but I'll take it.
Yeah, there you are. Of course, in my mind, it would have been turned into the musical, and we would have been sort of serenading with you with something like "I love you, Samantha."
I should
Bing Crosby.
I should have just sung all my lines.
You should have just sung it all. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And of course, the big trick is if you've got something that you don't want anybody else to hear, you do sing it. I was singing all the time. But
tricks of the trade that not everybody knows, though, Tim.
Well, now they should know. You know, come here, learn all the tricks.
Right.
But Manrika, I just think Manrika is possibly a little naive in terms of the television, this form of television, and I think she's going to pay a price. But the death threats is not a price I consider acceptable.
It's at the end of the day, it's a television show and it's a game. Mm-hmm. Those are like the two things that are very important to remember.
But at the same time, I think production knows what it's doing. And production should be there to advise people who are playing, this is not a good thing to do because. Yeah. And at that point, you really do need the voice of God to act as your conscience, because they know. And it's not interfering with the game. It's presenting. Somebody explained to me quite early on that they weren't in this. They weren't making the show to make me look bad. They were. The producers who are working on my behalf were there to make me look as good as I could be. Mm-hmm. And I think they did a great job. And, same thing with you, Alex. They're really to make you the best.
I think they're making everybody look their best, but they also, their first and foremost job is to create an arc,
yep,
a mm-hmm. narrative, and a through line. Otherwise, it's just an incoherent jumble.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, at the back of my mind, of course, is I think the whole thing is written out before we even start. But I think there is an option for stronger characters to influence that arc. Mm-hmm. And I'm perfectly happy to allow for the possibilities. It isn't fully scripted before
a variability
we start.
Because you never know how anybody's going to behave as soon as they walk into those mm-hmm. flats. There's certain things that you can.
There are certain things you can anticipate, and really good casting will.
Like how you present yourself, how mm-hmm. you handle yourself,
how you respond to things. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like.
See,
we don't want you handling yourself too often on show. Which of course takes us to science. Spectacular question.
I have to go and run and grab a charging cable, but I'll be back in.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Go ahead,
yeah,
go ahead.
Okay. We will entertain ourselves with science for a minute. Did you see the episode with the questions for the agony aunts?
No, I didn't get that.
You missed that. Oh, hello. We love your knitwear and your trousers. There was a scene where two of the characters are supposed to be agony aunts, and they were being asked questions, and this was going to determine whether Dot stayed or whether Tally stayed. Okay.
Oh, okay.
And in the event, just so somebody who's listening can scream spoiler, Tally went, and Dot comes out with her line, Nana Dot ain't going nowhere.
Yeah. And double negative. Lives to see another day.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Scott, but I think I find he's sort of overdoing the explanations. And if I compare what he's doing with what Natalia's doing, Natalia is effortless. Here I'm saying something to Manrika, and then I'm explaining why I've said it. And it's just so seamless. It's as if she was made for this sort of subversive television.
Right.
She just provides a narrative with no effort. Whereas I feel Scott is just being... You know, he doesn't really know where to switch off the theatrical performance.
Right.
But then he's an actor. I mean, actors don't switch off. They're sort of constantly on stage.
Right.
And I enjoy the theatricality of it all with Scott. I enjoy his.
Yeah, he cracks me up. Some of his commentary is absolutely hilarious. But I agree with you. I think that Felix, a.k.a. Natalia, I think she does a great job with explaining things very well. Mm. Going through her emotions, you know what I mean? It's like, I think this because of this, or I feel this way, or this pisses me off, you know?
But it's never an alienating. Right. She never over-emotes with her irritation or her pleasure.
No, it's all very matter of fact.
It's so matter of fact. And then the communication through the circle is actually filled with quite a lot of emotion and quite a lot of energy. So she sort of saves that for the communication with the other players. And for us, she just becomes this beacon of serenity. We've talked a little bit about. So let's go back to Dr. Saeed's naughtiness. And his very impertinent question. Is this a question that you think Saeed's frustration, do you think that's an issue that most people would experience?
He totally stumped him.
I remember like being like,
being on your own for too long, do you need to
I can't remember the specifics.
Deal with things.
I remember seeing it and saying, holy shit, did he really say that?
He did really say that.
He says as Saeed, everybody knows that it is Saeed. That's part of like the shtick.
Yeah.
It's like I make a painting and they know it's Saeed's painting.
Yeah.
So when it's anonymous.
So even when it's anonymous, he cuts through that anonymity. He's such a beautiful character. And it's such a beautiful performance.
To know that even though it's anonymous mode, people are looking for Saeed's message. So he can't say anything completely off the mark or wild, because then they'll be like, well,
then they'll know.
Saeed. Where is Saeed? One of those is Saeed. Yeah, exactly.
What did he ask the Aunt Agony?
Please
repeat it verbatim.
I can't repeat it verbatim because I don't remember it verbatim. Actually, I was so surprised it came out. He said that he said that he's been in here for so long. He's very frustrated. Yeah. There you are. A little bit of American. And so Tally sort of tightens her belt and says, "Well, we don't find this alarming, and just get on with it." Ask Circle for some private time, and Vethan says, "Oh, I don't." Vethan has a little giggle and says, "I don't know how he's going to deal with that afterwards." anything Vethan says, and I just think he's
adorable.
He captures vulnerability, and it's so difficult to do on screen. And those people who can do it, you just want to sort of you want to collect them, because these people are gods of the small screen or goddesses of the small screen. This is what makes a star: that vulnerability, that ability to pull you in and make you feel
I feel like in that, I feel like I want to see more of Ethan, but they're not giving it to us because he's not as big as all the other characters.
No, he's a silent force. But I notice that there's a fellow on the internet who does caricatures of people, not me. Mm-hmm. And he's done a very, very charming picture of Ethan. And I think, he's honed in on one of the characters that is sort of controlling the narrative, although you don't see so much of him. And I think even when he's asking a question which is a bit impertinent, or even when he's making a comment which is a bit impertinent in the anonymous scene, and that I'm sure he didn't want to ask. You probably know when you've got these anonymous questions, you first of all, you have to say, well, I'm giving the game away here, actually. First of all, you list five or six possible questions, and then production will choose the one you want that they want you to say. And it's not always the one that you would really want to say. I mean, And I'm sure Vethan was in that situation.
I'm not entirely certain of it, though.
Because, are you not?
Because, I mean, the way he introduced himself in the beginning, he's like, this is a numbers game. This is not about being friends. And granted, he has learned that it is about being friends, and he has made friends there. But he's also, he is behaving rather strategically.
Right.
And I think that would be, you can't quite overlook that. So I'm not.
You can't overlook it. But you see, one of the problems with this game.
To say these things. I'm not convinced of that.
One of the problems with the game as it is at the moment, which I didn't have, and which actually you didn't have, is because the game was set up as a game of friendship in my day and in yours, the strategic thing was then laid on the top of that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So once you knew everybody was reaching out to be friends, then if you were being strategic, then you had an advantage. Or in my case, I wasn't really strategic for myself. I was quite strategic for one or two other people. Not as strategic as I should have been, and not as effective as I should have been. But yeah, I certainly knew who I wanted to make sure got through to the end.
Mm-hmm.
My two top players, the ones I really wanted to get to the final table were Woody and Sammy. And yeah. I would have done anything to make sure that happened. little did I know that Sammy was the one who I was going to have the biggest problems with. This is why I was slightly upset, because Sammy didn't know how much I'd been sort of fighting his corner. Right. I think he did, actually. But also you didn't know because you didn't see all those extra conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So you had no idea watching my show of the bond that was really there between myself and James. So if you've got those bonds and you've worked on those bonds from the beginning of the show, then you can allow for strategy and stuff to go on. Now, if you don't have those bonds, which this show doesn't, it's quite demonstrable. It is just about strategy.
The bonds
in this case are formed by chance, not by intention.
Well, that's true. I feel like that's true. I feel that, like that,
that. That seems like just a little too cynical.
Well, you know,
that. I mean, it's all sort of by chance. I refuse to believe that.
The sun behind him. He's all rainbows and butterflies. We're over here cynical as hell.
Because you choose who to have to an extent, you choose who you have these conversations with, and to an extent,
Alex. No, rubbish. You can't qualify that statement out of existence, Alex. Come on.
Oh, I can qualify anything. I know
players in my series, for example, who never spoke to certain people. Mm-hmm. Never. I know I only ever had one conversation, I think, with Katie. I think there might have been somebody else I only ever had one conversation with. I had one conversation. I never had a conversation with Brooke on her own. I think I had a conversation with Georgina on her own, but only after Scholar Squad had been destroyed by me. For example, Jan never spoke to Paddy or Georgina, so she could never have got Paddy or Georgina to have voted for her.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions I'm constantly being asked is why don't you have conversations with everybody right at the beginning? Because
that's what I said.
It's practically not possible.
Yeah.
That's the stuff we don't know.
You want to get into that room and you want to talk to everybody because you want everybody. One, you want to know everybody because everybody you know for a fact, if they're a catfish, if they're real, they are genuinely interesting people. They have a story and you want to know it. And two, you want everybody on your side so you get ranked high. You want to jump in and talk to everybody.
But there is another way of doing this, and that is that you're going to learn about people in adversity. So you wait for that adversity to occur, and then you get in. So, for example, I don't think I had my first conversation with Woody until I'd been threatened by Richard Madeley. And then Woody was just there immediately for me, which was wonderful. And I will never forget that. He probably will never know how reassuring he was, because I was in a great state for 24 hours or so.
Right.
And I mean, that sort of the game that Richard Madeley had to play towards the end of his stay was a precursor to the sort of harshness that's happening this season.
Yep.
Yes, it wasn't as bad, but it was pretty hard.
I feel like that is even worse in ways than this, because Richard was never going to win. Richard was never really a player.
Yeah. No. He was a shitster. He was a shitster.
Yeah, no, yes, he was. But you see, there are ways to... So I agree that his game was exactly the same sort of game that we've got in the modern twists, with this difference that Richard's twist was voted for by the public, and the public was compliant in this nastiness, or the public was complicit in this nastiness, fairly nasty, but in this case, everything is handed to this rather sort of silky perfection that is Emma Willis.
Well, I mean,
and so she is the face of just almost unmitigated evil. It's like it's like having a visitation from Satan as conceived by John Milton. I mean, if she was slipping down the tree of life and saying, "Go on, have a bite," and she couldn't really, do it any better, could she?
If the surveillance room was bathed in red light, it would be more appropriate than
appropriate.
Yeah, well, you know,
you see Emma after an alert, you're like, shit is happening.
Yes, yeah. and she looks like the Virgin Mary, but that's not what she's doing.
I think part of this is the change in format, how it's not being recorded live. I would actually very much prefer if it was the same way as it was for the last UK series, where it's like you get on your phone and you vote either or, you click a button, and that does have, because one, it engages the audience at home. Yep. Like, I have to watch because I have an hour after the show to choose one or two. And bless you. And sorry, I lost my train. It puts it on the public, which is kind of weird and cruel in a way, because I mean, really, you're only getting two options.
But it balances it out. Mm-hmm. So it makes the more palatable thing to watch. So the only people then who are going to be really upset are the lab rats on the inside, which is fine. Yeah. I don't mind being upset.
Because if they had Yolanda have to choose who she was going to clone based on audience, it would have been a much different
situation. It would. That probably would have redeemed the show, by the way.
Also, it's like then Yolanda gets less shit because people aren't saying, because people can't.
And production gets less.
Mm-hmm. Because it's like it's out of her hands and she has to play the game. It's the same with Gemma. Who is Gemma going to try to kick off? And if it was up to the public, I have no idea who it would be.
Right.
I must say, I think Emma Willis does a spectacular job. But if I had that job and I'd had that job last year, and then I was suddenly pushed into this position where I had to go into the room and just be satanic like that, I probably would have walked out of the show and I would have said, you know, you keep your 30,000 quid or 70,000 quid, whatever you're paying me. I have no desire to present myself as daughter of Beelzebub. Scion of hell. But she does it she really does it beautifully. I can't think of anybody I would want to do it. Well, I wouldn't want to do it. I can't think of anybody else who could do it so gracefully, but
yeah,
it is
with as much terrifying. Like, sympathy and understanding as one could. You don't see her and say that she's evil. You see her and say, "Oh God, I have to make a really hard decision right now."
Yeah. It's like it's like The Exorcist should be, but
oh yeah, Tim, your evil commentary. That's hilarious.
But no, I like her. I like her.
No, I get what you're saying, though. I totally get what you're saying. I just think if I were playing
that role, I would want my salary tripled.
Right. You know.
Because I think of the three heads of Satan at the bottom of Dante's Inferno. Which head am I today? Ooh, this is an entirely new vision of the circle.
Know, yeah.
The circles of hell.
I still think, as cruel as it is absolutely captivating.
Well, see, that's...
I'm never going to stop watching this show.
Yeah, we talked about
I'm afraid
about
a lot
this.
Of people have, though,
Alex. I've heard.
We talked about this last time.
An episode of Fawlty Towers had 2 million viewers when... The circle had less than 1 million viewers. It's like that's
whereas last year it was competing with Love Island or something, wasn't it?
I have no idea.
I do like to think that I was competing with somebody sort of flexing their muscles.
No, but we talked about this last time. You know, Survivor has been on for 20 years, and the evolution of the game has changed drastically from the beginning to what it is now. And a lot of people like old school Survivor and just straight alliance, ride with your people. But a lot of people like the new school way it's played. But that happened over a span of 20 years. The circle has jumped in a matter. I mean, it's like, yo, they went from like 0 to 100 in like no time flat.
Well,
you know?
There are no rules. Literally, yeah. Anything can happen and anything can be dictated by the... I mean, at least
by production, which means, Alex, this summarizes one of the issues I'm very interested in. Whenever you talk to newspaper people or politicians, they automatically lapse into using the term contestant for a participant. In fact, I've used it today for a participant in a reality show, because reality shows pitch themselves as a sort of game show, a superannuated game show. Now, if the rules are constantly changing, it cannot be a game show. This is a magic trick, and we're then not contestants. We are lab rats, or I much prefer to see myself as a rather elderly version of Debbie McGee, the magician's assistant. I don't do the bikini or the sort of feathers. I really would do the feathers if you gave them to me. Julian Clary would not have a match on what I could do if I were given the opportunity.
Bottom line is Tim does not agree with the trajectory, whatever the word is, of the show.
Yes, it's the word.
And the way it's going, he does not like it. So I just think it's
cruel.
Well, I don't think it's in the players' hands anymore, and I thought that's what it was supposed to be about. It's like the players, like, you form these relationships, you build these bonds, and you choose, and you do, and from talking to the people that's played, that's not necessarily how it goes.
I feel like it's especially hard this season because it is particularly a drastic shift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More so. I mean, it's like we didn't just get one. We've had two of these, like, big, massive, like, somebody is being fucked by the circle.
Right.
I think
if I'm reading the through line correctly, the next big shock will actually be participant-led, because it is now up to one of the participants to scream foul, and I would expect one of them to do so because they've been pushed too far.
Mm. That'd be interesting.
So that's my prediction for the next few. I don't know, Alex.
Is it 1, 2, 3? I imagine we're going to get at least one new player. No.
Yes, I think we're definitely going to get one more new player, maybe two more new players, but definitely one more.
And I'm really excited to see who that is and what that looks like, especially
and whether she or he, whether they have a chance. Really.
Well, it's like if you keep up in the ante and you're like, oh, the shock value, oh, like how, like. how hard can you go? It's like eventually it that just
well
I don't know.
We are inevitably going to have one more nasty twist.
Right. Oh, for sure. If not a handful. Because I feel like I'm trying to remember back. It's all a blur because the way British television works, it's on every night instead of like me watching one episode a week.
Right.
So like we're
that's called BBC, really. No, sorry. This is not.
It's like episode 10, right?
We're episode 10. We've just had episode 10. And I think we've probably got another 5 episodes to go. We're going to have episode 11 tonight.
Tonight?
No, there is no episode tonight.
No, it's Easter.
It's preempted by some sort of racing. Formula racing. Really? Yeah.
Do we not have the... Oh, I thought we had one tonight. Then
yeah,
we're going to have it on Monday. Yeah, but I don't.
Alex, know this, and you
believe
know.
Me. I don't live in the circle. The circle is not my life.
No, I meant you live there. It's aired there. You should have seen it on the
circle.
Film.
Might have destroyed my life. It's not my life.
You're not really geared up to watch race cars on TV.
I live for motor oil. Do you know Alex? Although I quite enjoyed steering a tractor when I was 5, I still don't know how to switch a car on or off. I have never sat behind the. Actually, I have once. I had one lesson about 4 years ago when I was standing for election in a local town, and I got into the car, and the instructor said to me, "Now just drive down this street." I said, "But there's two schools down this street, and it's 3 o'clock, and all the children are going to be rushing out of the school. I'm going to kill a child and then go to their parents' house and say, 'Please vote for me.'" You know, I found it terrifying. And you know, I the one thing I know I can do is steer. I steer a very good plow. Furrow, but I don't know how to switch off. And I thought, if we have a crisis, I'm not going to be able to stop.
Well,
and,
yeah. I mean, the difference is that the tractor has a maximum 10 miles per hour.
Well, you never saw my mother drive. She had a maximum 10 miles an hour as well. complete with cigarette in her mouth, but she never, you know, the ash remained stable. And she,
that's going to sound like me when I'm old.
On a tractor or in a car?
Both.
Both. There we are, you see.
Chain smoking, yeah, sounds just like
my mother was very obedient in the car, but she did used to have people hooting behind her, and she had expressions for them, which was indicative of the fact that they were behind her, and but I don't know anything about cars. My partner has the cars. For a long time, the car was in my name, which I thought was a little bit sort of perverse, given the fact that I wouldn't know what to do if I got in the driving seat.
That's funny. But Tim can't drive.
I can't drive. Don't know how to do it.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, it kind of goes along with this podcast. Like, we never drive it in one direction. We're just all over the place.
That's
like,
it's the best.
Jerking it that way. Like,
Elaine, we don't want to go down Dr. Saeed's interests. Elaine, it's a podcast about the circle. I mean, we can't possibly use a straight line to get from one side of the circle to the other.
Well, but you can just keep turning. You just keep turning.
We do. We keep turning, and we keep coming back. It's a Liv Ullmann song.
We go far left, and we turn this sumbitch right. You know what I mean? Like, we just all over the place.
But haven't we actually discussed the last two episodes?
We have discussed more circle in this one podcast than we have over the entire.
It's what you say. It's what you say every time, Elaine.
I know. I do.
By the end, you'll just have a solid episode where you're strictly.
We will have a solid episode.
This is true. We're just going to edit all these together.
Yeah,
and it'll probably be about a good solid 15 minutes of circle talk.
Yep. Yeah.
But it's fun, though. It's fun.
A solid episode. Would that be the sort of thing that Dukalax might have dealt with?
yeah.
Dukalax, unblock your circle.
Yeah.
But
dude, you got sponsors lined up, don't you? You just start calling them.
We got so many sponsors lined up. You know, I think it would be such a good. Do we have? Do you know? The one thing, we've got 22 comments here. Are they all hating
he
what we're saying?
He never reads the chat.
I'm not. Now, we've got a person called Yesenia Martinez who's saying, right, that's all, folks. I can't wait for Monday. Yes, she's lovely. Poor girl. Showmans. Nathaniel B., I think Gemma will have a good chance to bounce back. Manrika and Andy might start to have a downfall soon, though. No, I don't want a downfall for Andy. I adore Andy. Anthony Eros is saying, ha, 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 very good. That's not very, I'm not quite sure what he's talking about.
Well, it's because you're supposed to read it as we go.
I know. I was so desperate to get our banner out that I forgot that, that I should have. He's saying, Tim is on form tonight. How very reliable. I found the first week really difficult to watch, he says. I have missed the last few episodes. Should I persevere with snow? Oh, with show. I was thinking for a minute. We were in some sort of mafia drama there.
Yeah, see, I've got to get on my computer so I can watch the chat.
Yeah, you really do. I actually need somebody to save me from this sort of thing. Yeah, because I'm not a technophobe at all, but I am.
Well, as soon as somebody can tell me how to use the computer, I'll get on it. Just, I don't know how. So I do it on my phone all the time. So.
Yeah, there we are.
Hey,
as
it
does
works.
Saeed.
It works.
There we are. Look, I think we probably need to bring these things to a close because I've got to run off and teach. Which is extraordinary. But Alex, it is such a joy to see you. Do you know we've not really had a proper chat
yet? We've never really talked like face to face.
But we have sort of, we've sent lots of messages to each other.
I'm a big admirer of yours.
Well, me too.
It's
entirely mutual.
Here talking to you.
He's so great.
I hope I've not disgraced myself.
Not yet. I'll let you know when you
do. You're very, 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 very kind. And I just think, mutual appreciation. I'm a little awed to be in your presence, particularly with
likewise,
the sun behind you.
Likewise, absolutely. I have to say, it's so lovely to meet Elaine. I have to watch season 39 of Survivor.
Yeah. Season 39. You'll love me. Don't worry. You'll love
yeah.
me.
No. I mean, you know, the thing is after being on the show, even the people you hate, you love. I mean, not that I'm going to hate you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it sounds like you were very beloved the whole time.
Yeah.
Alex, you mustn't say too much because I haven't seen this episode. I'm not allowed to see it.
Yeah, I told him he needs the watches so he knows.
Yeah, I'm slowly being introduced to Survivor. Series by series, and
starting with series one. And
yeah, I'm up to series three now.
I told him he needs to watch my season so he knows who the hell I am. You know what I mean? Like,
I know. To me, you are just a goddess on a tractor.
I appreciate it.
I knew the moment. Don't you find one of the lovely things about the circle actually is somebody walks into your life and you think, I like this person. And I'm rapidly getting to the point of view where I feel I'm a bit like Will Rogers. I've never met a man or a woman I don't like.
I feel that way too. I feel that
isn't
way.
It,
exact
isn't it
same
wonderful?
Way.
Isn't it wonderful?
Well, I'm starting to appreciate the fact because you know I live in a very small community and a lot of like-minded people and it's always good. Like after going on Survivor, it's been so great to be able to meet people from different walks of life and. You know what I mean? From educational levels to whatever. Yeah. And it's so interesting. So I learn something every time I meet somebody new. So I'm totally here for the new experiences, new friends.
I think you start when you're little, you want to meet people who are the same as you. Mm-hmm. And you get to a certain age when you just want to meet people who are radically different.
Yeah.
And whose views you're not going to necessarily share. You know, change my mind, please.
Yeah, you know. I agree with that.
The people that you don't agree with and that you can talk with and you can both say, I think you're absolutely wackadoodle when it comes to XYZ, but I still love you.
Yeah.
You're still my friend. And you can be wrong about things because people are weird and inconsistent and crazy and wonderful all at once.
Yeah,
I think that sort of comes a little bit with age as well. You get to an age where you realize, you know, I... you're going to say dreadful things, and it's not going to change my view of you at all, because you know, there's just not enough time for me to run around the place and make new friends. I like what I've already got. But I want to see. I'm willing the best in people anyway.
Well, I mean, yeah. If you're only meeting people that you're like, then you're not growing, you're not learning.
Right.
You're just sort of...
Well, it's a little self-indulgent, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nah, but I think that's the right way to be, man. It's live, love, grow, move forward. Absolutely. You know what I mean? Like that's how it should be. And like I said, I may not know a lot of what the hell y'all talked about today, but
you know everything, Elaine.
it's okay. I'll email you a link to Battleship Potemkin so you can really.
You don't need Battleship Potemkin. You can just have that film with Sean Connery. All the best bits are in that
Sean
anyway.
Connery. That's perfect.
Isn't Sean
that's
Connery
right?
wonderful?
Yes. That's right.
I caught a few minutes anyway of League of Gentlemen, you know, his last film. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It was great fun, and I thought, my goodness, I remember going to the cinema and seeing this, but I must have fallen asleep because the end is really very good.
I have to watch that one.
It's I just think he was such a wonderful performer.
Yeah, he was. Listen, we're gonna keep going and going.
Yeah, we've got to stop. I've got to teach. So off you go,
Alex. Listen, thank you for coming on and talking
anytime.
With us. So nice to meet you. Yeah. Oh, I call him old lady. I'm sure she won't like it, but tell your woman I said what's up.
Absolutely,
she's in the background. I know somewhere. And it was nice seeing her face too. She jumped on for a second.
Yeah, we saw her.
And Tim, as always, I love your face. I'm gonna have to get off here real quick.
We will. Now, before we go, Alex, how do we find you?
How do you find me? I'm on Instagram at @a__, so it's 2 underscores, Lake, LAKE. I think my website is a-lake.com. Basically, if you go to any platform and enter like a couple underscores or dashes, you'll find me.
It's like Morse code, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And Elaine, how do we find you?
You can look me up at ElaineStott32 on Instagram or Twitter. And if you want to holler at me, give me a shout out. I always holler back.
Excellent. And for me, it's Professor_Tim_Wilson. Really, anywhere. Let's meet again soon because we're definitely back next Sunday.
Not sure who's coming on though.
I'm not sure who's coming on.
Yeah, we're not.
But
sure yet.
But we'll do a tidy up of the of the circle then. And if there's an opportunity to do an extra piece, we'll probably do that the following Tuesday. But it'll be next Sunday, which I think is Western Easter. So that's all very very jolly. Right. Have fun. Bye bye.
Anytime you want me. Just call
out. Right, we'd love to have you back anytime and talk Survivor, among other things.
Oh, yeah. Watch my season and we can talk about it. I can't even talk with this guy.
I will have seen all of season 39.
Okay, well, I just want to pre-warn you, there's some flack for my season, so just be cautious.
Okay. I mean, it's television. There's always flack. I'm here for it.
All right.
Have fun.
Bye, guys.
Bye.